This show is sponsored by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great tasting, healthy snacks right to your door. Forget the vending machine and start snacking smarter with healthy and delicious treats like dark cocoa almonds. Support this podcast by ordering a completely free NatureBox sampler box at naturebox.com/joey. That's right, it's all free, even the shipping. Go to get free NatureBox snacks at naturebox.com/joey.
Free.
Do it again.
Free.
This show is also sponsored by Onnit.com. Use code word CHURCH to get 10% off of any of their great products. Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport, Strong Bone. It's code word CHURCH to get 10% off. Also, go to MeUndies.com and check out the pictures they have of the different styles of underwear. And girls, they have hot-looking boy shorts. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey and you're going to get 20% off of your first order. And right now, if you live in the United States or Canada, you're going to get free shipping. And if you go to IronDragonTV.com and use code word either Joey or Church, you're going to get two free rentals. Iron Dragon TV is a brand new Roku TV channel. They have the technology for all the new 4K TVs. They have It Man series. They have Bruce Lee movies. And they sponsor some of your favorite UFC fighters like Tim Kennedy. Again, it's Iron Dragon TV, and you're going to use code word Joey or Church, and you're going to get two free rentals.
Oh, shit. Are you kidding me or what? Tuesday night. Special. Church of what's happening now. Just in case you're fucking slipping. Some people start slipping. November 18th, the day the devil was buried to see. And we took his pitchfork and stuck it in his fucking eye. And that's it. That's all I got for you. You guys want nanograms or whatever? It's all over but the shower.
Want what?
I don't know. What are you bothering me for, Lisa? What's happening, little brother?
You scared me today.
How was your day today?
It was good. I just...
You went to the gym. How many minutes did you walk on the elliptical?
I did an hour ago.
A fucking hour. How many calories did you burn?
That's right. Well, it's like an hour and 2 minutes, because when you lose weight, it takes longer to burn calories. So I did 800. Look at you. In about like an hour and 2 minutes.
You're a fucking savage. You're going to win the elliptical challenge. We're going to sign you up. There's got to be somebody right now on elliptical taking over the world.
Well, I mean,
knock
it's
his title right down.
Honestly, I should be doing more. Like, I should be doing weightlifting, and I got a Groupon to a gym that does the cross training and kettlebells. But it's you. How long did you try to get me to walk for? Months.
Yeah.
And it took me months to even. I never did it. I did like two or three times, and it was so scary to me to start that.
You live in California. This is how fucking this. You're a Jew. I love you to fucking death. You guys are supposed to be the top of the fucking pinnacle.
We are.
Geniuses. You live in California, but you decide to walk inside.
Right.
Like 10,000 fucking Californians.
Because I can watch TV on the elliptical.
Yeah, you're not supposed to watch TV. You're supposed to watch fucking life. People running red lights. Fucking cats running across the street. I want you to think about that. People are dying from lack of vitamin C because you fucking
vitamin
guys
D, yeah.
Live over here. You go to a gym. You walk like fucking momos. And meanwhile, it's 80 degrees outside. Vitamin D is the number one killer of obesity. Did you know that?
Oh,
it was just fucking in London. There's no fucking fat people. They started giving them vitamin D. People started losing weight. I'm on it. I drank a gallon of it today.
Of vitamin D?
Fuck yeah. It comes in little containers. I ate the whole thing.
It doesn't make sense, but it's better than me sitting on the couch for
You're not
going
to sit on the couch.
I used to.
You go to North Hollywood Park. You put a 20-pound dumbbell on your back, and you walk around like a fucking savage 8 times. You do that 5 days a week. You're 70 pounds you lose. And you'll be a dark-skinned Jew.
I don't tan. I go from the whitest of the white to burnt and then back to white.
It'll be like Sammy Davis.
What the fuck? Get it together, dog. It's a beautiful day to be alive.
It is.
You were inside for an hour. You could have been outside for an hour grabbing vitamin D with your iPod listening to the fucking band you listen to.
Jumping up and down?
Jumping up and down.
Yeah. How was your day?
I had a nice day. I took Mercy to the park about 8 o'clock, walked around for about 10.
Did you play with the fire ants? That's the funniest thing.
No, I didn't take her to the fire ants today because we don't even go to that park no more. She's bored of that fucking park.
Did your kid get hit with fire ants? My kid got hit with fire ants.
That's how I take her out of there. Because she don't want to leave.
You tell her this
I take her to the fire ants. I take her to the fire ants. She plays around. She gets one. Then she goes, ah, and let's go. I pick her up, and it's out of there. You got this American ingenuity, though. You got to be on top of things. Nick Santoro in the fucking house tonight.
How are you?
Writer, executive producer, ex-attorney. names with a gangster, people confuse you, your credit's all fucked up.
No, my credits are good. This is a Nicky the Mouth. Is it Nicky the Mouth or Nicky Big Mouth? I think it's Nicky the Mouth.
I don't know.
Nicky the Mouth Santoro. I'm pretty sure it's Nicky the Mouth.
He was a banana guy.
I believe so. Yeah, he was a banana guy. He's still alive.
He's still alive.
I think last I heard he was in Chicago. But what the hell do I know? I don't know. I don't know the man. But I do know, a million years ago, I'm in law school up in New York. I get a phone call one day. Hello? Hey, Nicky, I'm out. I go, who the hell is this? He's like, I'm out. I'm like, what the fuck? I just hang up. I don't know who the hell it is. Phone rings 2 seconds later. Hello? Hey, Nick, I'm out. You told me to call you when I'm out. I go, who the fuck you? I hang up the phone because I don't know who it is. 2 seconds later, phone rings again. I pick it up. He goes, don't hang up. He's like, Nicky, you told me that when I got out, I should call you. I go, oh, you're looking for the other Nicky Santoro. I go, congratulations on your release. I go, I am not that Nicky Santoro. I go, I'm actually a law student. I swear to God, there's a beat of silence. The guy goes, you do criminal law? I go, I don't have my law degree yet. I go, you got the wrong guy. He must have just looked me up, you know, in New York. I don't know why he's looking up in New York or whatever. And then a few years later, I had an aunt, God rest her soul, who passed away, and I think she left me like $2,000. And I didn't know what to do with it. So I knew a guy, I wanted to do something smart. And I knew a guy whose dad was like, he worked at like Prudential. I didn't even know what he did at Prudential. And he said, oh yeah, he's like a stockbroker. He's like, oh yeah, he'll put you in a mutual fund. So he opens a $2,000 mutual fund. The next day, and this guy was like a lower level guy. Next day he gets a phone call. Come up to the 37th floor. 37th floor is all the executives, all the VPs, all like the head guys. He goes up there. He's never been called up to the 37th floor in his entire life. He goes up there, conference table, surrounded by guys. He sits down and they go, what the hell are you opening up an account for Nick Santoro for? And he goes, what are you talking about? He's like, for $2,000, it's such a small amount. Clearly, he's looking to see if he can open small accounts, maybe launder some money, blah, blah, blah. He's like, what are you talking about? They go, this guy's a gangster. He goes, this is a kid that my son went to school with. What are you talking about? They're like, no. This is the wrong guy. And he had to show him my social security number, my birth certificate, all this stuff, that it was a different Nick Santoro. Every once in a while, it pops up.
No, for years, every time I saw his name, I'm like, ah. Or saw your name, I kept thinking, oh, look at this fucking guy. He became a writer now.
Yeah, you know what's funny is there's a lot of Nick Santoros. Santoro in Italy, it's like Smith. It's not like Smith, but it's not an uncommon name. There's a fair amount of Santoros in the country, in America, and there's I've come across a lot of Nick. There's a Nick Santoro who's like a world-famous skateboarder. There's a bunch of them. Every once in a while, I'll get an email from one of them. I'll be like, hey, I saw your name on TV. That's my name. Go, what do you want me to do about it?
Is he a famous mob? Like, how did you know he was a mobster? Like, did he find out one day? Or
how did I know?
Yeah.
Because I got a call from a guy in prison.
But did you know that?
Oh, no. You just knew from, if you grow up with this name the same as the mobster, eventually someone just tells you and it just bled in. And then Casino came out and there was Nicky Santoro in Casino and people thought that was me. And
how did they get famous? Like, I've never even thought about it. But, like, how did all the big mobsters get famous? Like, back in, like, the 40s?
Singing. From fucking being mobsters.
I know, but it's like,
the Nicky Santoro we're talking about was a banana guy.
Yeah.
He was a big time banana. In fact, he still is a big time. Like, he's the only, there's like maybe three guys left from that Donnie Brasco, and he's still walking around somewhere. He could be out here. Every once in a while, I go somewhere and somebody will come up to me and go, hey, this guy over here in the gym, this is this guy. Like, who's in Beverly Hills now? Donnie Shacks.
I got no
idea. Yeah, so everybody knows he's in town. He's trying to put a reality show together. Guy's 70 years old. So I finally got a call about a year ago that you should come down and audition for Nicky's Montemoro, whatever his fucking name is, reality show. It's going to be called something about the neighborhood, and he's going to take care of problems in Beverly Hills. What the fuck? When does it end? So they started coming out here. There's a bunch of them.
What's Can you believe Whitey Bulger was here for how many
Whitey
years?
Whitey Bulger, but he didn't say nothing. But the other guy was right in Studio City. Ubats.
Listen.
Sal Ubats used to have coffee at Marie ETC every day. He just moved. He just moved recently.
Well, these guys, look, they did their thing. They did their time. They came out of it. Now they just want to live the good life in California. They want to You know, they actually want to walk around outside and enjoy the sunshine, Lee.
Well, they want to sell their story, you know.
I understand why they want
to
move
here.
It's too
late to sell your fucking story now. Like, they've heard 85 fucking stories.
Right.
Now they want to come out. They were a mafia. They carried envelopes. That's too fucking late. Where were you 10 years ago? We were buying.
Right.
Yeah, I get people pitch me mob stories all the time. I try to tell them, I go, there's no sale. I can't make them. I don't have the money to make the movie. You know, you got to go to the studio. And no, they don't want them.
Really?
And they're dead at the studio.
It seems
dead.
Like every 3 years is a new mob
dead.
Thing.
No. Dead. Well, dead. Now they got Whitey Bulger, but that's because, what's his name, isn't it?
They got the Depp one, they got the Affleck one, they got competing, and they're all messed up. I don't know what's going on with those.
Right. So, no, the one is shooting. The Johnny Depp one is shooting. That's done already, probably. It's the other one, you know, because the other thing is I get called once a month. Once a month I get a call or an email. Can you look at this script? And as soon as I see Nikki,
Joey,
Sal, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It doesn't even go farther than that. I call them up and tell them thank you, but I'm busy those weeks. I got something because it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it's going to be a fucking wear-out situation that I want to be involved with. I got better shit to do with my time, like fucking eat brownies with you and goof on you and shit like that. How did you get into this? We were talking earlier, you went to Columbia Law.
Yeah.
So you, the first, and this happens fucking every day, where the first day you walk into a place, you go, maybe this ain't for me.
Yeah.
But you don't say it because you're already there.
Yeah.
Now you get that fucking degree. You marry your high school girlfriend. She gained 60 fucking pounds. And now you're working and you're doing two fucking things you don't want to do. And then it begins. That's it.
Yeah. My first day of being a lawyer, I came back to my apartment on Bleecker Street. And my girlfriend had a key to the place. She was already in there. She's now my wife. Beautiful Italian girl from Bergen County, New Jersey. And we're still together. We've been together since I was 24 years old, 20 years. And she looked at me and she said, how was your first day? She was so excited for me, just beautiful and excited. And I looked at her and I just look her right in the eyes and I go, I've wasted the last 3 years of my fucking life. I'm $120,000 in debt. I want to kill myself. I fucking hate this. What the fuck am I going to... First day. I got home at like 10:30 at night, and one of the lawyers was like, let's call it early, you know, let's pack it in early today. Pack it in early, it's 10:30. I've been here since 7:15. But that's what it's like at those big corporate law firms. And my wife looked at me, and this is why we are a good, you know, match. I get sometimes worked up. And she looked at me and she said, well, you can't just quit. It'll make you look like a schmuck, you know, it's your first day, first week, you just got out of law school, it'll ruin your career. She's like, you got to do a year. Got to do a year, at least. And I said, all right, you're right. And I just did it, you know. I just did it checking off a calendar every day. You know, you were in. You know what it's like. Yeah. Don't let the time do you. Yeah, do the time.
Just do the time.
I'm not saying it's not the same, not nearly the same as being locked
time
up.
Time is time, brother. Time
but I just said,
time,
I got to kill. I got to kill. And I did a year, 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day. And I quit that job. And I said, you know what? My dad was a carpenter. He's a construction worker, union man. And I said, you know, there's money when guys get hurt. I'm going to go do slip and fall. And I went from like 1,000 lawyers in this beautiful law firm. I mean, gorgeous law firm. Tip of Manhattan, overlooking the Statue of Liberty, to 5 lawyers above a pizza place in Brooklyn. And we just did slip and falls. And you know, car accidents, malpractice, list any. I went from like the fanciest law firm in the world to honestly standing on the corner outside, you know, Woodhull Hospital, handing out business cards saying, you got hurt? Call me. You got hurt? Call. It was crazy. But I figured I could get into a courtroom and at least actually try a case. And that would at least be fun and exciting for me. Well, that sucks shit, too.
Sounds like the Wolf of Wall Street, essentially.
Yeah, except I wasn't making money like Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, I was the puppy of fucking Putz Street. You know?
Do you remember how much money you were making at the firm? Because my girlfriend's in law school, and she doesn't want to work in the firm because of what you were talking about, like the 90 hours, 100 hour weeks.
Yeah.
And she told me like the DAs when you start out can make like 50,000-60,000, which is good. But she tells me like when you go to like the first year of like a law firm, you make 200,000 or something.
Well, that's maybe today. Like at these back then, but I'm sure you know time value of money, inflation, everything. But I think I remember my starting salary in like 96 was like $84,000. And I think they gave like a $10,000 bonus. So it was like $94,000, $95,000. I think I made 99 total that year. That's wonderful. You know, that's I'll never say no to a dollar. You know, if it was honest money, but I hated it. And when I was a slip and fall guy, I fucking hated it. Every once in a while, you got someone who was really hurt, who couldn't feed their family, and you helped them, and that was good. But a lot of times you had people where you're like, I know this motherfucker's lying. I know his back's fine. I know his neck's fine. But you can't do anything about it because you have a duty. Yeah, if the client's telling you, no, it really, if they tell you, look, I'm full of shit, then you have to not represent. You have to say, I can't represent you. But when they're sitting there saying, oh, you know, oh, it really hurts, it really hurts, like, they're fucking lying. But what I did when I was doing that, because I was practicing law in Brooklyn and the Bronx and Staten Island and Queens and running around, I just, you know, and I think it's what a lot of writers do. I was just absorbing it all. And I did it for years and years. And just all the characters, the world, the craziness, the corruption, the scumbags, the pieces of shit, the ones who are trying to do it honestly, the fucking liars, the client, the plaintiffs who you really feel bad for, the scummy insurance carriers, then the beaten down defense attorneys that work for the insurance carriers, the corrupt judges. I had a judge, I was so dumb, I had a judge trying to get me to bribe him in his chain. I didn't even fucking realize it. A couple of years later, he goes away for taking bribes. He wound up getting like 9 years, I think, or something like that. Judge Barron, I'll say his fucking name. I'm pretty sure, if that's not the guy, please don't sue me. I got the name wrong by accident, but I'm 99% sure it was Judge Barron. And he went away. All this shit was going down, and I was just absorbing it and sucking it in. And the whole time, my whole life, since I was 6 years... should I shut up? Is this boring? You want me to...
No, this is tremendous.
From the time I was 6 years old, I always wanted to be a writer. I just loved it. And when I got to the place where I couldn't take it anymore, I was going to fucking hang myself. I mean, I was miserable. I was so depressed. And my wife, one morning, I'm sitting there. I'd gotten up from work. She comes out of the bathroom. She had gotten herself ready. She was a school teacher. And she got her face on or whatever. She doesn't even wear makeup. She's just beautiful. She doesn't need makeup. But she did whatever she did to come out. And she looks at me, and I'm sitting on the couch. And I'm still in my boxers and T-shirt that I wore the night before. I've been up for an hour. I couldn't bear to even put my suit on to go to court that day. And she looks at me, and I look up at her. And this has been going on for months now. Deep depression. And I just look at her, and I go, it'll get better. Because I knew what she was thinking. And she looks at me, and she said, well, it better. Because I can't live the rest of my life like this. And that just put the fear of God in me. Because she's not the kind of woman you want to lose. So I had a week of vacation coming up. I hadn't taken a vacation in almost 2 years. And I said to my wife, I'm going to take a week's vacation. We're not going to go anywhere. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to write a screenplay. And she said, thank fucking God. Shut up about it already. Write the screenplay. So I took a week off and I wrote a screenplay. I started on a Saturday morning. I wrote that whole weekend. I wrote Monday through Friday. I wrote Saturday, Sunday, the next weekend. By that Sunday night, I was done. It was a screenplay called Slip and Fall. It was about a crooked personal injury attorney in Brooklyn. I wrote what I knew and submitted it to the New York International Independent Film Festival. It won. It got accepted and it won Best Screenplay. And, you know, I don't know. I always get the timetable messed up because it was 15 years ago now or something. Maybe not 15, but 13 years ago now. But basically, I got David Chase read it and asked me to write one episode of The Sopranos for him, and it changed my life. And I quit my law job. My wife and I got in a Toyota RAV4, which was my car, and drove 3,000 miles away from every person we knew, set up shop in L.A. to see if I could make it as a writer.
And that's it.
That's what happened.
Fucking take a chance Columbus did, bitch.
Can you explain? Because I went through it, too. I moved out here to be an editor on TV, and I worked for 3 years doing it, and two of the years I was working nights, and I had that every day. Like, when you wake up and you just dread going to work.
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
I did that for about half a decade.
That's awful five, way to live.
Years. Everybody goes through that. This is an interesting conversation. Everybody goes through that.
And it builds character. I think it's good for you. Because now when I get in a situation where I'm like, this year I'm doing this show Scorpion that I created. And it's always... You get, when you're a writer, you get the developed by credit or the created by credit. It's a little bit of bullshit. You got hundreds of people making this show. So for someone to say, I created it, I wrote the pilot and pitched the show and wrote the pilot, but there's hundreds of good people making this show happen. But that being said, it's a first-year show. It's insane hours, 19-hour days. I had one day a couple of weeks ago where I probably slept 3 hours one night, got up on a Friday, worked all day Friday, we till about 5-6 o'clock at night. We started filming on 6 o'clock at night, went till about 7 o'clock the next morning, Saturday morning, raced home, got my kids, went to their soccer games. They had two games back to back, took them to a birthday party. I went 40 hours without sleeping after like a full day's work. And it was, you know, it was exhausting. That's what it's like. But when I start feeling bad for myself, like you were saying, it's good that I went through it because I can say I got nothing to complain about. I'm doing what I love. Some days are hard. It's not nearly as hard as being in Afghanistan with a gun. It's not nearly as hard as what my dad did for a living. My dad walked up and down scaffolds in New York City winters, sheetrock knives cutting through his hand, breaking his back, doing all this shit. I get to sit in a nice air-conditioned office and make up stories. I am blessed. I am happy. I got a wonderful family. And the reason I think I appreciate some of it is I spent years doing something that I hated because I wasn't meant to do it.
Now you know what it feels like.
And I know what it feels like to be unhappy. And you know what? Even then, I was being a little bitch because I had nothing to be unhappy about then either. I was making money. I was feeding my family. I got nothing ever in my life to be unhappy about. But I wasn't meant to be a lawyer. I always wanted to be a writer. I'm happy with what I'm doing now. I'm very fortunate. I'm the luckiest guy you guys will talk to ever.
You know, it's funny that you spoke about slip and fall. How interesting. Like, now you have, I need to read the script because I want to laugh.
Well, you know what's funny?
I want to fucking laugh because I tell Lee all the time, when I was in high school, there was a guy, Cy Lawrence, and all this guy did, I mean, he went around.
He was a flopper.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had pants. He had pants that had pee stains in them. You couldn't sit next to him. He smelled. He lived in a garage. And this guy, throughout the year, he was a genius. What this guy did, he couldn't tell you on paper, but he was a degenerate gambler.
Right.
So USC would call this guy. Like, he knew all these coaches, and they'd go, go, we'll pay you. These are like secret scouts, and break down Pittsburgh. We're playing them in a month.
Oh, he's really good at it, right?
Cy was a genius.
Okay.
Cy was a genius. But in the off season, Cy set up, so he kept bugging me for years. Joey, I know he'd make a scam. All I want is 400. He had 50 guys paying him 400. He took you to a supermarket. He dropped the pickle juice on the floor.
You flop.
You'd slip, and he'd tell you, as soon as somebody comes to you, the key words are, did I pass out? That's the money right there. Because then we're going to put you on an ambulance. I swear to God.
You have to go through it, because he's gone through it, like, each step. And then he's telling, like,
oh, my God. We talk about it every day.
Yeah, and the other thing that you do is you tell the client, is what you say is, listen. And this was in, because what I did is I took Slip and Fall, I turned it into a novel. It was a national bestseller called Slip and Fall. Oh, that's God. What you should read. And I took the screenplay, turned it into a novel because I wanted to explore it even more and really get into it. And you'll love it. It's set in Brooklyn and it's nice. And the there's a scene in it where the lawyer is prepping his client for deposition. And he says, listen, I can't tell you to lie. I would never tell you to lie. That would be against the law. I'm just going to tell you what the law is, and you apply your facts to that law. If you say during the deposition that you walked into the supermarket and slipped on the pickle juice and fell down and got hurt, but you had just entered the supermarket, you have no case because you can't prove how long it was on the floor. And then the supermarket doesn't have what the law calls actual or constructive notice. But if you're telling me you walked into the supermarket, passed the pickle juice, noticed it, went and got your cereal, your milk, your eggs, your oranges. Then when you were walking back to the cash register about 20 minutes later, you slipped on the pickle juice, which you rightfully assumed would have been cleaned up by then, so you weren't looking for it, and got hurt. Well, then you've got a $100,000 case. So now, tell me the truth of what happened. And you know what? Amazingly, no client ever told me that they hadn't seen the pickle juice first, and 20 minutes hadn't passed. And that's why I fucking hated myself.
Fucking amazing. And then he had other attorneys that would tell you if you broke an arm, you got $50,000. If you broke a leg, you got $100,000.
Yeah.
If you slipped and broke your hip, like if you really broke it. So they would look for people who were just at homes already recovering and make up a story. I mean, it was fucking, this is what he did every day.
Yeah,
he did this every day, Cy. Every Cy.
You had people who would be people get, you know, they never had a homeowner's policy, and then they'll get a homeowner's policy, and they'll talk to their friend down the street and say, come over to my house for some coffee. And when you leave, you're going to say you slipped and fell on the ice on my stoop. And I'm going to say that it was icy. I poured down some rock salt. It melted it, but I didn't push the water off, so it created a clear ice, which was more dangerous because you can't see it. So I created a dangerous condition. You'll say you fell. You'll say your back hurt. I know a chiropractor. You take an MRI. There's a line in my book, Slip and Fall, where the guy with a crooked chiropractor says, MRIs are like those inkblot tests. Some people see a butterfly. Some people see their mom with an ice pick in their back. Either way, you see what you see. He'll say you have a bad disc, and we'll get some money. And that's what would happen. And I'd have these clients, and I'd know they were lying about it, but they would always say they were telling the truth. Just so happened that their good friend from down the street happened to slip in their house. And the guy who owned the house would say, yeah, it's my fault. What happens? He loses his home insurance policy. He didn't want it to begin with. So his friend gets $100,000. The lawyer takes $33,000. The friend gets $66,000. And the friend then kicks him back $25,000. And it's and by the way, it's all tax-free money. You don't get taxed on personal injury money.
I'm going to throw you down the stairs tonight, Lee.
But you know what? These people, I'm telling you, that's why I don't have my license in California. I don't do this stuff anymore. I'm not involved because the truth is eventually, and that doesn't take that long, 99.9% of these people get caught. They get caught, and there's no good in it.
I knew a kid in Jersey when I was growing up that got hurt. Not a good friend, just I heard the story, got hurt, and took some time off, and he worked for like a big trucking firm. He was a big shot there, and he took time off. He was suing the trucking firm or something. Went to the deposition. They awarded him the money. And that day, he was dancing in a club in the city, and they took pictures of him. He lost the case. They said he had blow. He was on a table.
Yeah.
You know, and they did it recently in New York. A bunch of people, the fire guys that wanted disability.
There's a lot of these guys. They follow him with video.
Yep, and they got him on a boat. The guy hadn't been to work in fucking 5 years, and they caught him out in a boat in Staten Island fishing, pulling in a fucking great white. You know, but you got a bad back. You're out there fucking being Jaws. Yeah.
It's really a problem. The disability stuff has a ton of fraud in it. It's an issue, and I didn't want to be part of that. And I would look. I never told a client to lie, even when you break down the stuff for the deposition. I wasn't as bad as maybe I was making it out. But the truth is that these guys out there. There are guys out there that are really good personal injury attorneys that are trying to help people, and there are a lot of people out there that are just doing the wrong thing. And I just didn't want to be part of it. And then the truth is even if I was doing the right thing every single day, which I was, I just wanted to write. I just wanted to write.
And the crazy thing is, the truth between you and I, the money I got from helping Cy Lawrence, I paid for that 10 times over in karma.
Yeah, there you go.
That 18, I think I got 18,000. When I got arrested, my attorney bill was 18,000. I mean, it was just...
There you go.
It always came back to haunt me, that 18,000 fucking dollars. So... At the end, you don't really win nothing. You just buy some fucking time for yourself. I remember I fell in front of a fucking sneaker store. And here's how even crazy it got. I fell in front of that sneaker store, but they sold the sneakers I liked. That's how I knew the hole was there in the sidewalk. And I went back there 6 months later to get a pair of Adidas. And I was in a rush. I had to catch a bus or something. And I just took the box. And when I got to Aspen, Colorado... I put the sneakers on. One was a 12, the other one was a 9.5. I had to walk like a schmuck with a 9.5 and a 12. And I got an ingrown toenail and fucking... So there you have it,
there
folks.
You go.
Karma is always a motherfucker. So now, David Chase got you on the phone. Did you shit your pants when he called you?
No, he didn't call me. I had been signed by an agency after I won the film festival. And they said, they'd been calling me. And they said, listen, you got a meeting. And I said, look, I've told you guys 1,000 times. I'm a working lawyer. I can't just fly out to L.A. I'd only been with them a couple of months. And they said, no. This isn't in L.A. It's in New York. And I go, who the hell in New York? Who? And then it just hit me. I'm like, don't tell me. And they're like, yeah, David Chase, Sopranos. He loves your script. Can you go meet with him? And I said, yeah, I can go meet with him. So I went over there, and it was, Silver Cup Studios in Queens. And there's that parking lot right across the street. It has a big chain link fence around it, so you got to park and then walk all the way around to get the Silver Cup. And I've told the story before, but because it's the truth. I parked the car, and I got out. I started walking around the fence. And I remember looking at the sidewalk, looking at the cracks in the sidewalk, trying not to step on. And I said to myself in my head, I was like, okay, asshole. Next hour, 60 minutes determines the rest of your fucking life. You got 60 minutes. You're going to be happy the rest of your life. You're going to be miserable. So I went in there and we talked. And I talked about story and character and that kind of stuff. And he talked to me about my script. He told me he thought my script was very funny, you know, very real. And he said to me, you know, look, but, you know, I understand you're an attorney. When are you going to have time to do this? And I looked him right in the eyes and I fucking lied. And I said, well, the good news is, Mr. Chase, is, you know, it's December and the holidays are coming up. And I took an early vacation. My vacation starts tomorrow. The truth is I had a trial starting the next day. And he said, great. And so he said, let me talk to your agents. So I left and I got a call from my agents that night. I was living in Long Island and, you know, Long Beach. I was living in Long Beach and in this tiny apartment in this house, one of these big old houses built right on the block before the boardwalk. And they had an apartment. The apartment was the old maid's quarters. So it had a separate staircase, separate entrance. It was tiny. And in the winter, the wind would blow through that thing off of the ocean. It was, my wife and I would go to bed at 6:30 because we were just too fucking cold. We needed to get under the covers. And the phone rings. And that's the first thing I learned about Hollywood. When the phone rings and there's two agents on the phone call, it's good news because they both want credit for it. They both want credit for giving you the good news. And they were both on the phone and they said, congratulations, he wants you to write an episode of The Sopranos. I'll never forget that feeling. I said to my wife, I'm like, I was so amped up. I said, we got to go for a walk. Now it's December on the boardwalk at 10 o'clock at night because it was 7 in L.A. And we went out and we walked. I'm like, let's just walk the boardwalk. Let's walk the boardwalk. We were both so excited. And I'm walking the boardwalk and we walked maybe 100 yards. I'm like, fuck this. Let's get the fuck out. I'm freezing my ass off.
When he called you, did he give you parameters for the script?
Well, then I had to go back in and meet with him, and he gave me a piece of paper. I sat down with him and Terry Winter, who did Boardwalk Empire, who's a friend and a very nice man, and he was very good to me. Because after that meeting, Terry came up to me and he said, listen, it's a free... And this is the height of the Sopranos mania. It was between seasons 2 and 3. Season 1, it was a breakout hit. Season 2, people got nuts, and people couldn't wait for season 3. And Terry Winter... came up to me after the meeting and he said, listen, here's the deal. I want this to be a good experience for you. Here's my home number. Here's my cell number. Here's the direct line to my office. You have any questions while you're doing this, just give me a call. He didn't need to do that for some freelance schmuck who had never had anything produced in his life. And he's just a nice guy, Terry. He's always been nice to me. And so we sat down and it was one sheet of paper at this point. That was it. One sheet of paper. With a bullet point, and there were about 50 bullet points, each for a scene, and each bullet point had one sentence. You know, Tony talks to AJ about football practice. I'm making stuff out of, you know, that kind of stuff. And then he'd say, yeah, in this scene, we're looking for this or that or whatever. And I was just jotting down notes. And I went home and I wrote. I was writing it at night. I wrote it on the weekend. I finished it in about 5 days. And I remember David Chase called me and he said, I heard from Terry that you're almost done. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, are you sure? This is really fast. And I'm like, no, I'm rereading it, but I'm done. I feel good about it. He's like, okay, you know, send it on in. And the one thing that law school did for me and being a lawyer did for me is I'm fast. I wrote my last novel in 8 weeks. And if you give me a good outline... on a network television show, you give me a good outline, I'll have you a script in 36 hours. I gave him the script. He turned around, called me up, and he said, listen, I got it. Thank you for your work. There was a C story in it about AJ having a crush on a girl. He's like, we decided we don't want to do that story. So we're going to put in a new story there. It's like 4 or 5 scenes. And he said, but, you know, I'll never forget it. He said, I want you and your wife... move to L.A., go write, you're going to have a successful career, you know, you're going to be a writer. And I was on the Northern Parkway in New York in traffic when he called. And, I was on Northern Parkway after I left his office, after he gave me the beat sheet. I was on Sunrise on Long Island when he called me and gave me that. And that was very nice of him to say. And the last time I ever talked to him. Guy just came into my life, sprinkled fairy dust on my head, and said, I'm going to change your life. I never talked to him again. A few years ago was the 10-year anniversary of me getting that job. I sent him a very nice bottle of wine with a note that said, thank you very much for the opportunity 10 years ago. You changed my life. I sent one to Terry Winter. And Terry and I keep in touch every once in a while. We'll email. You know, David Chase is when Slip and Fall, the novel came out, I thanked him in the book. He was one of the people I thanked because the guy changed my life. He wouldn't know me if I went outside and he hit me with his car. He'd be like, who's this bald fuck that I hit with my car? He wouldn't know who I am. But changed my life.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
How did you take it in classes in college or just because for the second thing you ever wrote, it sounds like you're to be writing Sopranos. Were you nervous or was it just you didn't even know to be nervous?
It's funny. I wasn't nervous. You know, it's so funny. I know. Well, to answer your first question, I've never taken a writing class.
That must piss a lot of people off in this town. That must be the worst thing.
Maybe, but some people, you know, I think writing classes can be very effective and very helpful, you know, but I just never did.
Right.
I kind of on the job training. I think it was one of those things where you're so blessed, you're so stupid and so ignorant about the business. You don't know enough to be nervous, at least at the beginning. I was nervous when I walked into that meeting. I knew I had an hour to either give myself the life I really wanted or not get it. Or at least have to wait a lot longer to get it. I knew enough that if I can get a Sopranos episode, that's got to mean something because this show is really popular. And I do remember sitting in the basement of my in-law's house in Jersey, and they have my father-in-law has a little basement office he keeps down there and just filled with, you know, bric-a-brac and shit. And he's a little desk. And I remember sitting there on my computer. And that's where I went to type. It was quiet there. And I started typing, and I got to, I don't know, three quarters down on the first page, and I typed in the word Tony. And I was about to write dialogue for Tony Soprano. And that's the one time it hit me. And I took my fingers off the keyboard, and I kind of pushed away from the desk for a second and just went,
This is fucking real.
I'm about to write something that Tony Soprano's going to say. So it should be good. And, you know, it was a good episode. It was the episode where at the end, Tony told Assemblyman Zelman, go ahead, you can sleep with the Russian girl.
And then
he takes his belt off and he whips the shit out of him.
That's a good episode.
And that was also the one where they shot up bought the crack house, the HUD house.
Right.
They pulled out all the copper piping, and then they just used the loan money. And that was a fun episode. There were some good lines in it that, you know, that I wrote that I think did well. And it's still to this day an important credit on my resume.
Absolutely.
When people say you wrote for that show, because people in the business know I beat 1 in 10 million odds getting that job with no the first thing I ever had produced was a Sopranos episode. The first time I ever saw my name on television was my wife and I had moved out because, you know, it took so long with HBO to actually, we moved out to LA, and then a few months out in LA, they finally aired the episode. And we were living in this tiny little apartment. And, I sat on the couch, and we got the New York feed. So we got to see it earlier.
7 o'clock or something.
Yeah.
5 o'clock or something.
And, yeah, I sat there and watched it on TV, and my name came up, and I started to cry. Because I said to my wife, I'm like, you're the only one, you know, who thought I could do it. It was nice.
What was it like? How much time was there between you sending in the script and you hearing back that he liked it? Because I can imagine, like, he might be worried that he's going to call and say, I hate it, you made a mistake.
No, he was very kind. I mean, he said to me, and he was honest, and I didn't realize at the time that it's very common. And now that I'm a showrunner and I've created three television shows now that have gotten on the air, I've been very, very blessed, that, you know, when you have a tone and a voice of the show, a showrunner will take it and tweak it and make changes or blah, 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 or do a wholesale rewrite. In this case, he said to me, he's like, look, you know, I'm going to go through it and do this, that, or whatever. And I was like, oh, no, maybe, you know, he's being nice, but maybe he doesn't really mean it. He's telling me I could be a good writer. And I called up my agents, and they said, no. This is the way it works. And then when the final script came out and I saw it, I, you know, 80% of, I'd say, the C story had changed, which they told me was going to happen. But I'd say, you know, 70, 80% of my dialogue was there. You know, and, you know, there were some lines in there. You know, it's when Paulie gets out of prison and they're like, Paulie, you know, what can I get you? And he's like, after 6 months inside, how about laid? And at the end, Tony goes, I never thought I'd say this, but to the federal government, when he's cheering because they stole the federal HUD money. And so all that's all stuff I wrote. And where I grew up in New York, you know, everyone talks like that. It's how, you know, and you know these guys, and you know how they talk, and they're, you know, they're very charming, fun guys.
You know how the good line in that scene?
Who's that? You probably know it better than
Sharippa. When he goes, hold on, and they play his song by Sinatra, and he's sitting there, and all of a sudden he goes, this is his song, and he goes, why is it his song?
Is that in that episode? I don't even remember.
That's that episode, because I remember it now.
I haven't seen that episode in probably 10 years.
It was on, it's funny.
It's called Watching Too Much Television.
Right, but The Sopranos was on, and then they were on A&E for a while. And I'd catch them on A&E, and that's when, in the daytime, I'd be bored. They came on like at 3 or something. That's a great time, then Dick on. So I started watching them, and that's when he has that line. He goes, why is it his song? Everybody's got a song.
Yeah, everyone's got a song.
Why is it his song?
He was great on that show. He was he brought a lot of sweetness to that character. It was great. Yeah, they replaced the storyline I didn't write at all. They replaced the AJ storyline with the story of Chris and his girlfriend, and she doesn't think she has to testify against him, and she goes to the lawyer, and the lawyer's like, you've been watching too much television. That was the name of the episode. And I think that was like 4 or 5 scenes that I had zero to do with. And I think Terry Winter came in and wrote, and Terry's such a great writer.
And from there, you went to Prison Break.
No, from there, then I moved out to L.A. to look for work, and my wife and I were out here, and I had no. I quit my law job. She was a tenured teacher. She quit that job, and when I asked her, I said, listen, I think maybe we should give this a shot. I'll never forget. She looked at me, and she said, okay. She goes, it'll be an adventure. If it doesn't work, we can come home. That was it, and we moved, and it was hard. All my family was back. All my family's back. I come from a very close family, a very big family, a very close family. Moved out here, and I was out here I was unemployed 16 days. I just got a horseshoe up my ass. I was the lucky guy. And I got a job on a show called The Guardian on CBS. It was season 2 of The Guardian. It was with Simon Baker and Dabney Coleman. It was picked up for 22 episodes. We wound up doing 23. I got paid for a whole year as a writer. I wound up as a baby staff writer, getting my name on multiple scripts that year, really writing a lot. Sony, only time this has ever happened to me in this business, Sony gave me something for nothing. They were the studio, and they said, this kid's doing a great job. We need to promote him. They didn't ask me to give him a pilot script in return. They didn't ask for another year on my contract, and they promoted me within a year. I was up 4 levels. I went from a staff writer to a co-producer on the show. And then when that was over, I went to Law & Order. I did that for 1 year. While I was on Law & Order, I created a reality show called Beauty and the Geek that ran for 5 years on the WB and CW. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
And that I'd never done reality before. Haven't done it since. But that's when reality was in its heyday.
Heyday, right.
And I just said, I remember watching a commercial, and a network had a show called The Littlest Groom, which was basically Who Wants to Marry a Midget? And I said, and they pulled it. They never aired it. They pulled it because people got so offended by the commercials. But I remember watching the commercials, and I said to my wife, you know, this shit, we're in trouble because I'm a writer, and this shit's not written. And I got to, if you can't beat them, join them. And a month later, we had Beauty and the Geek sold. That got on the air. And then I went from there, from Law & Order to Prison Break, which was the best 4 years of my life. I mean, what a group of writers. All those writers on that show, man, they were amazing. And we did that, made some of the best friends of my life, worked hard, had fun. And from Prison Break, created a show with a friend of mine called Breakout Kings. That ran for a couple of years.
A&E.
It's a very fun show, good show.
Dominic Lombardozzi.
He's like, you know Dom? He's like my brother, that guy.
No, I've never met him. I just see him in 29,000 fucking
things.
He's
the best human being, the nicest guy.
Another fucking guy with a mobster name.
Yeah, but he's a good man.
Everybody says he's very cool.
And you want to talk about an actor that will just give you his heart and soul. I mean, he'll do it. He'll just do it. And he and I, you know, we become close. We're like brothers, and I love him. And did that, during that time, I put out a couple of books. I had my first novel, Slip and Fall, my second novel, 15 Digits. They both did well. The first, you know, first one was a national bestseller. And so that was an interesting, different type of storytelling, you know, books. And then what did I do after that? I did Breakout. Then I did Vegas for the 1 year it was on. I wanted the opportunity to work with Nick Pileggi. You know, anyone who writes Goodfellas and Casino is all right by me. The coolest cat you'd ever want to meet. 81, I think he's 82 years old now. He was 80 when I worked with him, and he showed up every single day, more energy than anyone in that room, the nicest man, the most decent man. And you want to talk about humble? I mean, I don't know about you guys. If I wrote Goodfellas, I'd wear a T-shirt every day that said, I wrote Goodfellas. I'd never stop. I mean, listen to me now. All I'm doing is talking about myself. I haven't done shit in this business. And Nick Pileggi never, you got to pull it out of him. And I did. I made him crazy every day. I was like, hey, Mr. Pileggi, remember that scene when Pesci goes, when little young Pesci goes, hey, how you doing, Hendry? I go, why'd he call him Hendry? Why didn't he call him Henry? I'm like, was that a mistake? But you, I mean, every day. And the best was, he's like, no, that was scripted. He goes, we knew a guy in our neighborhood. He couldn't say
people
Henry.
From the Bronx.
Yeah, he called him Hendry.
Hendry Earl.
Yeah.
They really said Earl. I went to school with a family, the Balzanos, and the mom, Marianne, was in the Bronx. And she'd said that. She would say Hendry.
Yeah.
Hendry, Earl, instead of oil. She had a couple words that were just fucking tremendous. Hendry.
Hendry,
yeah.
Oh, and I drove him crazy, and he was so patient with me. He answered every single question because I just love, and I loved him. He's the nicest man. Everyone called him Nick. I refused to call him Nick. It was Mr. Pileggi. Just out of respect for what he did. And also,
he's
80 years old. You call him, you know, I'm like, in my kid's school, all the kids are like, they call all their friends' parents by their first name. I tell my friends' kids, I'm like, my name's fucking Mr. Santora. Call me Mr. Santora, you little 10-year-old shit.
Yeah. That's how I was raised also.
Yeah, and I called him Mr. Pileggi, and he said to me, he's like, please, Nick. And I was like, okay. And I tried it. My mouth wouldn't say it. I tried this. I couldn't do it. And I said to him, I said, Mr. Pileggi, if it makes you really that uncomfortable, I'll call you Nick. I'm like, but it's just not right to me. And he said, okay, you can call me Mr. Pileggi, Mr. Santora. And he called me Mr. Santora and still calls me Mr. Santora to this day. And he's the nicest, classiest guy you'd ever want to meet. I love him.
That season of Vegas, wasn't the guy from Chicago on there?
Chicago. It was Dennis Quaid and Michael Chiklis.
No Farina? Oh, that Vegas. Oh,
yeah.
My God, you wrote that. Oh, shit.
Vegas. Yeah.
I was talking to you about the other fucking Vegas.
There's been like seven Vegases.
Yeah, I was talking about the Vegas with, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I never went in for that fucking show.
Yeah.
I didn't know what kind of Vegas it was. I remember hearing about it.
It was based on a movie that Mr. Pileggi had written a million years ago about the real Ralph Lamm and his interactions with organized crime in Vegas. In the early 60s, when Vegas was really starting to really getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the battles between outside money coming in from the mob and old school Nevada ranchers who that had been their family's land for years. And it was such a ripe world to be explored. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of the executives just were kind of looking for it to be kind of like a crime of the week, case of the week show. It eventually, by episode 6... turned into what it kind of probably should have been the whole time, which was this saga. But by then, the audience had gone from like 17 million, almost 18 million that it premiered to down, it was just attrition, and it couldn't be saved. And I felt bad because Mr. Pileggi, this other guy, Greg Walker, who was running it with Mr. Pileggi, really nice guys, but it didn't work out. But I got to work with Nick Pileggi. How can I complain?
You know, it's funny. Didn't Pileggi have Goodfellas on A&E? For a while, was supposed to do it
as a series.
Yeah.
Oh, I never even heard about that.
Yeah, they came out and announced it, and I couldn't see it.
He writes every day, Nick Pileggi. Every day, he's got stuff going on with Scorsese. He's an inspiration. I want to grow up to be Mr. Pileggi. He's the best.
And now you got Scorpion.
Now I got Scorpion. Look at you. I'm forgetting
Is Scorpion about?
Scorpion is inspired by a real-life guy, Walter O'Brien. It's inspired by his incredible intellect. He has a 197 IQ. Average is 100. you know, if you got a 125, you're pretty sharp guy. This guy's 197. Einstein was 160. So that shows where this guy is. And it's like a Richter scale. So 197 is not 37 points smarter than Einstein. It's about, you know, 5,000 times smarter than Einstein. And he's like a guy. He's from Ireland. He lives in L.A. now. And he's super smart. And he does all this crazy shit. And he has this company called Scorpion. And he only has geniuses working for him. And they problem solve. They'll problem solve for governments. They'll problem solve for massive corporations. They'll problem solve for charities. You know, his whole thing is I'm a very bright guy. There are other very bright people. Let's try to do some good. He also likes to get very rich. You know, he's got Ferraris and Lamborghinis.
This is the guy from Terminator?
Well, that's Robert Patrick.
I saw him on that. I saw the commercial.
Yeah, he's on the show. He plays their government handler. Elias Gable is the guy who plays Walter O'Brien.
I got called in to play a guy at a plant. Two lines.
At a plant?
Yeah, like some furniture factory or something. Hey, you've been not doing the job here.
Don't do your best, do my best.
Yeah.
I was just cutting that episode.
Something like that.
And you know where that line comes from? I can't take credit for that line. Don't do your best, do my best. That's Adam Carolla's famous line. And he's always saying that line. I'm friends with Adam, so I stuck it in there as a little goose to him. But yeah, that's. I didn't even know you came in on that.
I didn't. I was out of town.
Oh, okay.
They called in like on a Wednesday, and they called in that morning or something. They said, "Can you make it at between 12 and 1?" And I couldn't make it.
Oh, okay.
But it was like one, and I didn't know what it was. I go, really? You want me to play a fucking factory
worker?
That's
right. That guy gets shot and killed.
Yeah,
anyway.
Right. Something happened. You get factory worker or some shit. I didn't know what they were.
Yeah,
doing.
He takes a bullet. But Scorpion is doing great. It's the new number one drama on CBS. It's got a young, that, you know, everyone wants that young 18 to 49 demographic. And normally, if you can get like a 1.8, a 1.9, okay, that's, now we're doing something here. We're well above a 4. You know, we were average, I think we'd do like a 4.5, 4.6 at one point. I don't know. It's a blessing. It's good.
He's tough right now, though.
It's tough. I'm working long hours right now. But
TV's,
I got,
TV's very tough right now.
Yeah, and TV, and you know what, TV is tough, but this show's doing really well. And so I'm doing that. And then I got the my first kid's book that's out now. I Want an Alien for Christmas. It's a chapter book. It's about 134 pages. It's for like 5-6-year-olds up to about 12-year-olds. You got to read it to a 5 or 6-year-old. 7, 8, 9-year-old, they can read it themselves. But I'll tell you, you probably didn't know this, Mr. Diaz, but on December 17th, something happens with Santa Claus. He goes on a test run. He gets in his sleigh with his head elf Elvis, and they do a test run, and they check weather patterns and the navigation that he's going to use in a week on Christmas Eve to make sure everything goes smoothly. Except when he goes behind a cloud bank in the middle of the night, he smashes with a star hopper, which is like an alien version of a jet ski. And a little 10-year-old alien was playing on his star hopper. Well, they smash. The alien flips in the air and lands in the sleigh. Santa and Elvis tumble into the star hopper. The reindeer see the alien. Reindeer are stupid. They think they can run away, even though they're latched to the sleigh. They take off and crash in a small town called Millbrook Falls, New Hampshire. And the three Bartlett kids find the kid and find the alien and realize the alien's down here. Santa's up there. We got to switch him and save Christmas. And it's a really fun, it's a fun story for kids. It's already been optioned for a movie. I'm going to be producing it. I'm going to write the script. And I really, 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 if we're really going to get this movie made, need people to buy it. So if you're incredible listeners, want to get a gift for a kid, a niece, a nephew, a cousin, whatever, just go to Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. I Want an Alien for Christmas. Good family Christmas fun.
You're an old school motherfucking writer. Like, you don't give a fuck.
I'll write anything.
Books, toilet paper, you don't
I'll
give a
write
fuck.
Anything. I'll write anything. I'll
it's
write
amazing.
A fucking Bazooka Joe comics. I don't give a shit.
Because some people just, well, I just write scripts. You know, some people have attitudes or whatever the fuck. Yeah. You have, and I mean, even the genres. You know, all right, Prison Break, you know, The Sopranos, you like the criminal world.
I obviously. Like that stuff, but
you like
I also,
stuff.
I've done, I wrote a comic book series for DC called Sandstorm, which was a horror movie set in the, a horror story set in the Afghanistan War, and it was something original idea I had. I'll write anything. You know why? Because I had a job I hated. I was in my my mid to late 20s, and I was like, I'm a young man, and I feel like I'm 100 years old. When I was a lawyer, I used to say to my wife, my biggest fear is that I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life. Now that I'm a writer, I say to my wife, my biggest fear is that I won't be able to do this for the rest of my life. I love what I do. I'm so happy I get to do what I do. And I like being collaborative. I love making film. I love producing film. I love editing. I mean, you were saying, Lee, that you like, I love editing. That's rewriting. That's the best. To me, it's the second best part. The purest part is sitting there and writing it. And then editing is when you get to fix all the fuck-ups. Oh, man, I overwrote this. Let me cut those three lines. Oh, we can do that whole speech with a look. Let's lose it. Let's do this. Let's do that, you know. And it's fun. And some of these editors, I mean, they're just artists. They're painters. And I get to work with incredible editors on Scorpion. And I've gotten to work with incredible editors throughout my life. I love working with great television directors. I love it. I'll write anything. I'll do anything. Want me to write you a joke? Right? I'll write you a joke. I'll do anything you want.
That's amazing that you... wrote like a kid's book, like a genre, and you have children.
Yes,
how old are they?
I have two little girls, 5 and 10.
Wow,
like you are the blessing of daughters, and they're beautiful kids. They're good kids, and you know, I Scorpion's the first thing I've ever done that they can watch. Now the 5-year old doesn't watch it because she actually said to me this morning, she's like, "Daddy," and my kids both, because they grew up in my house. They both have they've lived in California their whole lives. They both have New York accents because they just learned how to talk in my house. So, you know, my little one looks at me and she goes, "Daddy, I don't understand what they're saying. I can't understand the show. I don't like Scorpion." And I said, "Okay." I go, "I get it. You don't have to like it, sweetie. That's all right." And my oldest one's like, "Oh, you're crazy. It's the best show on TV." Because she loves it. It's the first thing I've done that we can enjoy together.
As a family, yeah.
So that's special to me. And the kids' book is something that I wrote for them. And they love it because it reads like a movie. I mean, it is crazy. There's a guy, an Air Force cadet that works at NORAD, and he notices when the sleigh crashes that there's these fire streaks in the air. And he realizes that copper, when moving at a certain speed, gives off heat flashes. And there's like 7 of them, and he connects them. And when he connects them, lo and behold, it looks just like the runner of a sleigh. And he realizes, holy shit, that's Santa's sleigh. Because when this guy in NORAD was 10 years old, he was looking up at his sky with his telescope and spotted Santa on December 17th. Santa, because he's magic. This all makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's almost-
Santa, because he's magic, looks at him and gives him a wink because he knows that he's being watched. And this guy from NORAD goes, "Oh my God, that means I'm special. That means Santa's going to give me the best gift on Christmas. He's going to get me a Commander Cody retro rocket with optional bonus boosters because I've been so good." And then Christmas morning, he gets a fucking catcher's mitt, and he has had a hard-on for Santa for now his entire life. And now he's 27, and he sees Santa crashed into Millbrook Falls, New Hampshire, and he's like, "I'm going to go get that fucker." So you got the guy from NORAD, from the Air Force, going after Santa. We got a bad shopping mall Santa, like bad Santa, like Billy Bob Thornton, realizes there's an alien in town with these little kids, and he's going to catch that alien and bring him to the National Enquirer for $1 million reward. So we got a Santa going after the alien. We got a guy from space going after Santa. We got a school bully chasing all of them, and it just becomes like a mad, 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 mad world, and it reads like a movie, which is probably, hopefully, why it got optioned, and I hope we can actually make this fucking thing, because it's
you're
fun.
You're a fucking savage, brother.
I just got to write shit. I got to write it and sell it.
I am just blown away. After I spoke to you, I read a little bit about you, and I was just a fucking attorney. Why would you quit?
Because sucks a big dick.
I see it.
It sucks.
You know, I knew nothing. I did comedy for all these years, and I wrote jokes in cars. And years ago, I used to get up. About 6 years ago, I started getting up at 4 a.m. at night, and I would write for 2 hours. You know,
get up at four.
Four in the
morning. What time would you go to bed?
Didn't matter. I got just up got 11. Up at 4. And I started writing a blog, and I, you know, forgot grammar. You know, it's amazing how you...
Yeah.
And I remember looking at the blog after a year and going, wow, that's what writing is. It's a muscle. And you have to hit it every day.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel with comedy. When I wake up in the morning, I write a little bit, and then I fuck around, absorb, and then write a little more. And, like, tonight before I came, I wrote a little more, half hour.
And this is, you know, to put together sets for shows.
Yeah,
and
tag, something yeah. I've been thinking about. Just because sometimes I'll put the sentence out and then work it in my head.
Yeah.
Then put it on paper and take a look at it and go, okay, here we go. Once it's on paper, it's completely different.
And you can always really hear it when you say it out loud.
You're right.
I go crazy. I write scripts. And I like, one of the reasons I like writing scripts, you said grammar. Like, I can't spell for shit. I mean, I can't.
My, does it spells it for you?
Yeah, I know it spells for you, but my spell check is like, fuck you, motherfucker. Give me a break, because I can't. Every other word is wrong. But the thing I like about writing scripts is the dialogue. It doesn't matter. It just has to sound real. Bad dialogue almost, like, it offends me. Bad dialogue hurts my ears. And the tough thing with television, especially when you're doing a procedural like Scorpion, is sometimes you got to write dialogue that's not that natural, because you got to do all that exposition to explain the case to the audience, the case of the week, whatever it is. And I've gotten it down now where you can give the audience that medicine, but wrap it up in some sugar so it's not as bitter as it normally would be. But I all you got to do, someone like you, you could write dialogue that sounds so real, that sounds so, you know, with all the shit you've done and all the experiences you had, it would be easy for you, you know. But what I do when I'm writing my dialogue is I'll just say it out loud. I'll act it out. I'll get up. If I'm doing a Southern guy, I'll pace around in my office. I'll talk in some half-assed Southern accent. I'll start going crazy. I start sweating. I just got to make sure it sounds right. And you do what you got to do. But, yeah, I mean, getting up and this stuff. Look, Mick Betancourt, like I said, he's one of my best friends. I know he's a friend of yours.
Dear friend, love him.
Mick knows. I'd give it all up tomorrow to do a half hour. The best thing I ever wrote in my life was a Curb Your Enthusiasm script. I don't watch hour drama. The only hour dramas I loved Breaking Bad, which I think was one of the best shows. For me, it's the best show ever made. I love that show.
I love that show.
All I do is I watch The Office and Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Modern Family and Archer. And I watch this stuff. Like, I just want to make people laugh.
You know, I hate half-hour comedies.
Yeah, well, some of them are absolutely terrible.
Can't fucking watch them. Cannot fucking watch them whatsoever. I have a problem. I grew up watching the other morning I woke up last, what's today, the 18th?
Yeah.
So last Thursday I woke up early in the morning at 6, and I went and I threw my wife out of the bed so I could write, and I brought a cup of coffee in and I opened up the computer and I go to Facebook, and right under the thing it says, it's November 13th. Felix was asked to remove himself from his place of residence. That request came from his wife. I almost dropped my cup of coffee. Yeah. You don't know. Nobody fucking knows.
You don't know what that is?
Nobody knows. The tears in my eyes. The Odd Couple.
It's one of the greatest shows. But that's what I grew up watching.
This is what I'm telling you, so you cannot. I grew up, listen.
All in the family.
But it was 11 o'clock. Felix, 11:30, the Mooners.
Yeah.
12 o'clock, Sanford and Son, and 12:30, Twilight Zone. Opened up with 10:30.
WPIX?
WPIX started at 11, but yeah. I grew up at 10:30, you had Benny Hill. So you were smoking dope, we're playing lifting weights, everybody knew it. 10:25, gotta go, Benny Hill's on, 10:30. You went home, just maybe Benny Hill dropped a tit, because every once in a while
something would happen.
They'd show a tit. Something would happen on fucking TV and nobody said nothing. There was no wardrobe malfunction.
There's no
black
FCC,
people jumping up and down. Nothing. 10:30 fucking. And then at 11, you switch right over to WPIX.
Honeymooners.
And it was the Honeymooners. And in my world, there was two writers for that show. Two writers.
Yeah.
And he would come over and break their ball. Two writers. One night I'm watching Saturday Night Live. I get back from watching comedy, from doing comedy, watching comedy. I'm sitting there. And it's Jimmy Fallon and the fat kid that lost a lot of weight, Horatio
Sanz.
And this is when I stopped. This is why I'm the way I am. I'm old school, bro. Yeah. Don't try to run it by me, because I came from Cuba. Yesterday I went to jiu-jitsu and some kid was there, a Cuban kid, and he goes, hey, man, I brought you a present. He just came to town to visit, but he heard the podcast we did with Hegan Machado where I spoke about Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke is how I learned to speak this fucking language. When I came from Cuba, I knew nothing. I knew PS-166, and I knew Dick Van fucking Dyke.
He'd fall over,
but then season two, he walked around.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. They don't do that shit today.
He skipped around.
And he skipped around and looked at the TV like, what, bitch? Yeah. Okay, that's being a fucking writer, okay? And so I grew up on that. And then you had All in the Family, the mother-in-law with the Desi Arnaz. There was a bunch of shows we grew up. But something happens when you're 9 in New York. You discover the Honeymooners.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got the proof right here. I remember me and Whitey O'Donnell on my mother's bedroom phone, me on the phone with with the kid Valentin Ferro, doing the Honeymooner lines.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the line. Your mother going, what the fuck is go to sleep with the two phone? Why are both of my lines? Because there was no caller ID, waiting. You could use the phone. It was beep, beep, beep. And that's what you did. I remember when the group, that was it. And then the Felix Unger, there once was a man. His name was Unger, Felix. No, what was it? Oscar. He wore his suit very messy. FC Messy. All that shit. You can't. So for me to watch something now, the bar was raised.
The bar is high.
The bar was raised. A channel came out recently, Channel 20. It's called WeTV on whatever the fuck you have. I sit there at night and sperm comes out of my dick and my belly button. It's Hawaii 5-0, Mission Impossible, Canon. You know, these are the shows we grew up on, you know.
Nothing's better than a Hawaii 5-0 theme song. Nothing.
No, to me, Mission Impossible.
Okay, yeah.
I'm a Mission of the bongos. Yeah, yeah. Fuck the cowbell. The bongos came before the motherfucking cowbell that whatever talked about. I hit the babysitter in the head one night because I heard that. I heard the Hawaii 5-0. I hit it with the shoehorn. What was her name? La Nebbiosa. She used to shake when she talked. My mother said she had syphilis. So I hit her in the head with the shoehorn and shit. When I was like 7, I forgot. She was still alive. Whenever I go to Union City, she'd still be shaking. You hit me in the head with a shoe on the Hawaii 5-0. But I grew up on the Honeymooners. And there's times that I'm not doing nothing, guys. And I'm not ashamed to admit this. I probably have 16 episodes on my TV on DVR.
Yeah, yeah.
And when nothing's going on, I sit there and I put them on and I start crying.
Oh, yeah.
I start crying. I'm bawling. The lines fucking bawling. The other night I watched the one when he fucking tells the magazine company he's going to die because he read the dog.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And he shows up with Norton dressed as a fucking doctor. And he's Dr. Norton to keep it easy. Norton walks in. Don't touch me. I'm sterile. Remember, that was the whole thing. Don't touch me. I'm sterile. Norton, would you knock it off? I'm sterile. Norton, listen, we're going to give the guy the check and we're going to get the fuck out of here, all right? Guy comes in. Who's this? This is Dr. Norton. We want to give you back the check. We discovered I don't have arterial monochromia.
Right. You remember that.
I don't have arterial monochronium. I'm going to give you the check and we're going to leave now. Wait a minute. Come back here. And he tells him, you know, arterial monochronium, who's the guy? And he goes, don't you see that we have a human interest story here? And he goes, Dr. Norton, how about we take some pictures and do a story about it? And Ralph goes, no, not really. He's busy. He's got to go back or something. And Norton looks at him and goes, I don't mind a couple pictures.
What Carney did on that show was it was a master's class.
Come on, Doug. Come on, Doug.
Hello, ball. String of Pelopanis.
When he fucking danced. Here's a dance you should know.
The Hucklebuck.
And when fucking Carlos, that was the first Puerto Rican ever on TV. And he told them, you know, I don't care. What is it? Oh, Mrs. Manicotti.
Mrs. Manicotti upstairs.
Mrs. Manicotti, he wants to do the mambo. Everybody out.
And
you and your age should be ashamed of yourself and shit. The episode when he throws his mother-in-law out, that's one of the most. There's two episodes that I look at today and I look at because of the brilliance. And it always involved the mother-in-law. 60 seconds, I give you 2 minutes and she'll fucking ruin my night. And he sets the time, and he's got tickets for the play.
Yeah.
Murder Strikes Out. Jimmy Pearsall, Boston Red Sox,
bitch. He lost his mind.
He lost his fucking mind.
Started climbing the backstop.
A real Boston fucking Red Sox. Used to run around the bases backwards after he hit a home run and shit. He was crazy. Joe Sander, people. And he goes, you know, the press tells you not to tell their story. And at the end, he goes... She goes, and all the press saying that, not to tell the story, it was the butler who did it. And all of a sudden the bell goes off. It was perfect.
Yeah.
The alarm clock goes off.
The timing was perfect.
And all of a sudden he goes, he hits it, and he goes, you are a blabbermouth. Well, I was going anyway. Whether you were going anyway or any other way, I'm still throwing you out. And the one when they found the suitcase filled with money. That's one of the best written TV episodes of our day.
You know what one killed me? The one that made me cry, killed me. Not cry because funny, when they adopted the baby and had to give it back.
I never saw that one. That's the 1951 one.
Yeah, it was one of the lost ones. And he kept saying about the baby, they adopted a baby. They finally had a baby. And he's so proud. And Alice is so happy. And then the mother who gave birth to the baby decided, I can't do this. I need my baby back. And Alice is like, Ralph, if we love her this much, imagine how much she loves her. And Cramden's pacing back and forth. He's like, I don't care. It's my baby. I'm in love with her. I'm in love with her. You can't, she can't have her back. It's my kid. I don't know. I'm in love with her. And he's just going over and over. And it's heartbreaking. And they give the baby back. It's like a dramatic Honeymooners. It'll kill you. And that's the one that always stuck with me.
To me, he's always been one of the best. And you said it, Norton.
Carney was a master's class.
That's
the thing that I realized when I started. I was, you know, a kid. And I was, you know, in elementary school or late elementary school when I started watching it. And it was when my dad on a construction site, someone showed up one day, you know, selling TV radio combos that fell off the back of a truck. And he came home. And I mean, when I say the screen was this big, it was like two decks of cards on top of each other. And it was this big. And then there was a little radio next to it. And he got it for like 10 bucks, 20 bucks. He gave it to me. I thought I had the world. And I put it on the little desk next to my bed, and I'd lie on my side, and I'd watch this little black and white screen every night. I was supposed to be in bed, but I had to watch The Honeymooners. I had to watch The Odd Couple. And it's to this day, even when I write drama, everything I write has to have humor in it because that's what I loved. And I remember watching The Honeymooners and having this epiphany of, oh, my God, all the shit I've been watching that hasn't been doing it right has been stealing. All the shit, all the jokes, the pratfalls, the moves that I saw in Three's Company in 1977, 78, whenever the hell I saw it, it was all stolen from The Honeymooners. They just did it badly. All the crazy, I mean, he's the original crazy next door neighbor. He's the first Kramer. You know, all that shit. And The Honeymooners just laid the platform, the blueprint for everybody. And everyone's tried, no one's gotten it. And it's just, you watch it, and it's to this day, it's one room. One room, an icebox the size of a shoebox, one window, one door, and God bless them, a chest of drawers that seemed to have everything they needed in those drawers. I mean, anything they needed, a pad and a pen was in there. An extra shirt was in there. You know, if they needed a deck of cards and a pair of dice, everything was in that, and that's it. And a table with a couple of chairs. I mean, that was it. And they made masterful storytelling, week in, week out. Yeah, I love that show.
The Christmas episode, I mean... The fucking food with the chef of the future when they were going to cut the slices
chef of the
and dices.
Chef of the future. Chef
the future, of the future. Chef of the future. Who are you, chef of the future?
Can it call a apple?
Can it? I mean, just shit that we still fuck around with people. The tax one, it's just...
But the one, who was the guy when they're at the pool hall?
Oh,
and
the
my friend, was it my friend Harvey?
Yeah, I got
my friend Harvey.
Is even bigger than me. I got a friend Shirley. He's bigger than you.
So good, man.
Let me give some shout outs here.
Yeah.
Get you the fuck out of here and do our thing. I don't even know what the fuck we're going to do. How you feeling?
I'm pretty high.
See, I gave you a nice little edible.
Look at that.
Look at the shape of him.
Look at him. He's so happy.
Yeah, this is okay. He said he was going to give me mushrooms too.
But. He's sitting there thinking, he's like, when's this guy going to shut the fuck up?
No, this is what we do, brother.
No, yeah, no, this is amazing.
Something. I'm going to tell you something. If what we do on this show, I got a second chance in a lot of ways. And. You are the fucking epitome of stories for this. This is what we do on this podcast.
Great.
You know, people email every week that they're unhappy. They don't know what to fucking do. You know, when you tell your story, everybody goes through this.
Yeah, everyone.
And there's some people that have the balls to do what you did, or not even balls, or there's people who are just scared. And they'll live their life till they're 50, and one day, you know, you weren't scared.
And yeah, it gets... Well, I had to do something. But I tell anyone, like, when people get depressed or say, I was depressed, you just say, it'll get better. You got to just push through it.
You got to do something
gets
yourself.
Better.
Yeah. If you sit there and take the windfall, that's what's going to happen. But if you get up and do something about it, which it's a beautiful story. You know, you've been writing all these fucking stories. Write a fucking story about yourself, cocksucker. That's what you got to do. Write one about yourself. Forget all this shit with fucking Martians. Fucking scorpions and shit. Joey V. DiStefano, Joe Wando, Tommy Easter, James Melloy, whatever your fucking name is. Albert Jimenez. You always got to throw a Puerto Rican in there. Michelle Clifford, I love you, dirty bitch. Amanda Taylor, I love you, too. Thank you for torturing Lee today. Ross Dude, stay black. And Madison Ray, you sexy bitch, I love you too. Nick Santor has been a fucking trip. Lee, what do you got to say about this Did you learn something today?
Yeah, no, it's... I actually had a question for both of you guys. How do you guys deal with... Like, Nick, like, you love all the shows you worked on, and, like, when they
Not all of them. I just won't tell you which ones.
Well, even the ones you didn't... What is it like when they get canceled? Like, what is it when, like, a job like that ends?
The one that hurt was Breakout Kings. Because that show was the highest testing pilot FPC, Fox Network, had in over a decade. Tested through the roof. And they picked up... two shows that tested substantially lower than we did. One show got canceled after two episodes, and the only reason it didn't get canceled after one episode was because if it got canceled after one episode, they would have looked like total fucking idiots. So it got canceled after two episodes. The other show got canceled after 13 episodes. Our show got picked up by A&E, which never happens. You never have one network say, well, we're development execs. It's our job to develop TV ourselves, and we're going to admit to our corporate bosses that these other people did a better job than we did, and we should buy their cast-offs. I mean, it's career suicide. But they love the pilot so much, and it tested so high, A&E took it. And it proceeded to then set the record for the highest debut at A&E. It ran for two seasons with Dom Lombardozzi, and that was around the time like American Horror Story started getting popular, and the people at A&E said, you know what, we got to go genre. We got to go genre. We got to move away from cops and crime. In the meantime, Breakout Kings, if you watch it, just watch the pilot. It's the funniest one-hour cop show you'll ever watch. We cast Jimmy Simpson, did you watch House of Cards?
Yeah.
He's the hacker on House of Cards.
Oh, okay.
He's one of the best actors in the country. He's like a hidden gem. And I cast him off of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a comedy, hour cop show. Sunny is, I think that's a groundbreaking comedy. You might like, I know you don't, you like the old school stuff, but you might like, because these kids on Sunny,
I've heard that it's a
they
good show.
Take chances. They do different things, and it's wild. And they the whole thing with Breakout Kings is they decided we're going to go genre, and so after the second season, they just didn't have us come back, and we ended the second season on a massive cliffhanger, never got resolved. That one hurt because that show was my voice. It was what I loved, and it was fun, and I loved the actors, and I loved going to work. That one stung. That was tough. But then you put it in perspective and say, you know what? That sucks. I lost something that me and a lot of other people worked hard on. But you know what? I'm healthy. I've got a family that loves me. I love them.
I got a box full of pens.
I got a box full of pens. I've got a full 4.5-inch dick. Life is fantastic.
Life is fucking good, man.
That's fully erect, Lee.
Well, it's not bad.
I just get a text from Betancourt. You're killing it.
Yeah, it's great.
You're a fucking asshole.
You I don't know how many times. I remember fucking going to an audition the week before Christmas. Going down to whatever, fucking Olympic, going into a room and reading, and her going, come back in 2 hours. And I go back in 2 hours, and I get back in 2 hours, and Travolta's there. And I read with Travolta, and he's giggling, and we're all giggling. And she goes, listen, come back tomorrow at 11:30, and you're going to read for the director. Okay. And I'm washing my pussy, I'm putting my warm up suit on, and I get a call that the director hired somebody out of New York the night before. That happens.
It happens.
It happens in so many. And it's how you... I used to always get cliffhanged. I'm Captain December. I start rocking now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm already ready. I'm like, next week, that's it. My comedy career ends on Sunday. And I go to podcasting and films till December 20th.
Yeah.
That's all I do now. And it's every year, it just gets hot. But every year, I go in for something huge, and I go in on the 20th for it. And I got to sit for 3 weeks during the holidays waiting for the fucking cliffhanger. And then they call you on the 4th, and they go, either they went with you or they went with somebody else. You made me wait fucking 3 weeks, something you knew. They work during Christmas. Nobody just sits there and opens up fucking presents. So there's been all those situations, but then I've also been on the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
I also know what it is to go in and get it right away. And it's a couple of years ago, I got a call at 1 in the afternoon. Joey, they're looking for somebody on Ivar for an Italian Sprint commercial. Fucking walk. When can you walk to an audition?
Yeah.
When can you fucking walk to an audition? I walked, went in, read, walked out. The next day they had callbacks. I didn't get called back. I was depressed. They gave me the fucking commercial 3 days later.
Yeah.
I made a ton of fucking loot. I walked to a commercial. You know how many times that happens? Never.
Yeah, is it weird being on that side? Like, are you involved with auditions? Because I've been working with them for 3 years, and I hear, oh, I didn't do this well. I didn't like the way I did it, or just...
That's the worst part of the process, Lee. Be honest. Yeah. The worst part of the process for me, the thing I like the least about my job is casting. For a couple of reasons. One, 30 people come in the door. Every single one of them is talented. You don't get into that stage of the auditioning process unless you're talented. Unless you're immensely talented. And there's only one job. You got a 29-30th chance of losing when you go in. Two, it's not, at the end of the day, my final call. I might be a showrunner on a show, but there's networks people, there's studio people, there's a million people that are involved. And, you know, you have a very strong voice, but you don't always get to make the final call. Right. And I hate seeing people. And sometimes someone will come in and just kill it, crush it. They're amazing. But you know what? They're 4 inches taller than the male lead. And we need someone shorter than the male lead. And the male lead's only 5'8". So we need to get a woman 5'6" or smaller. And you had a woman who came in who was, you know, 5'11", and she was amazing. But you can't make the leading man look tiny. And that's the note you get from the studio. And there's a million reasons why an actor doesn't get a role. The last reason on the list, which never comes into play, is you're not talented. It's always the wrong look, the wrong this, the wrong that. But it's never, oh my God, your read was awful. Everyone comes, they do it a million different ways, and they're all interesting. They're all good. You want to give 30 jobs to 30 people. That's the part I don't like.
Yeah. And it's...
Because I do that. I audition all the time. I run around town with my little fucking knapsack full of stupid stories and go, hey, you want to... It's auditioning. Every time I pitch a story, I'm auditioning.
Right. And the worst part of anything like that, like even job interviews, is not... Like, they don't call you usually when you don't get a job. So, like... And it's like, it's just awful not knowing. Like, do you ever call an actor and be like, listen, you did a good job, it's just the network said no, or
did actually, they just... No, I actually have done that.
Oh, yeah.
It's rare, but I've called their agents, and I said, I just want you to know, your client didn't get this job, but they crushed it, and I want to keep them in mind for other stuff. They were perfect. It was this thing, it was that thing. They want to go a little older, they want to go a little younger. Now the studio came in and said they want the guy to be black, and you know, you could be as good as actor as you are, as you want to be, but you can't be black.
That's the worst.
That happens a lot.
Okay, everyone just heard it. Joey just said black people are the worst.
No.
He said worse than that.
I've had 3 or 4 situations early on when I was learning to be an actor, when I had a manager who was very aggressive, and there was one job in particular that they probably saw me 4 times in 5 days, and then said that they switched the character to black, or the other way around. I've known black people have been in for 2 weeks. Mind-breaking pile, and they switch it to a white guy.
Yeah, it just happens.
I meant it like that.
You know? Yeah, it just like happens. That. No, you said what you said. You don't like black people.
I don't like when I go in for an audition, the first thing they ask me is, how tall are you or what do you weigh? That's it. I don't like that. That's pre-qualifying. You're done. You know, they just asked you to kill it. You don't even know what the fuck to say.
And who the fuck cares? Come in and become the character. I don't give a shit if you're 150
months. No, but that's why you're
again.
Saying that. I can't go in to play opposite Tom Cruise. If he's 5'6", you follow me? You know, I know somebody who did the movie about the music down in Miami. He was his double.
Oh, the
Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
He was his body double. He was telling me, it's amazing how fucking tiny the guy was. How skinny, you know, the whole fucking thing. So I always knew I've never taken an acting decision poorly. It's always gone through me. I've digested it, and I've moved on. I've had friends that have been suicidal.
You don't get disappointed at some things?
Some things I'll go, fuck, I should have done better in the audition. My eyes are gone.
Right.
When you're 44, it's over. It's
you
over.
Know what's, can I tell you something? 44, the past 4 or 5 months, I said to my wife, I'm like, I'm getting headaches. I'm like, and at night, I'm lying in bed next to my daughter reading to her, and I'm holding the book six inches away from my face.
44.
I got to get glasses, 44, right?
44.
Do you have glasses?
Everywhere.
Everywhere you have
don't
glasses.
Don't go to the doctor, because the doctor's going to... It's $300-$400 SAG with the whole thing. You don't need that. Just go to Costco and get the 20-pack of fucking vision and just put them
in your magnifiers?
Car, put them in your car, the bathroom, because you're going to start the kitchen, anywhere where you got to look at shit. Because it just goes...
It's
fucking crazy.
I've never worn glasses in my life.
Never.
Fucking eagle eye.
Never. I could see a Coke rock under the fucking carpet. That's what I tell people for years. And I fucking, once I stopped doing blow and stopped At 44, my eyesight went into the shitter, and now, so now I'm at home. I got the glasses on. I'm doing the audition. Boop, yeah. Boop, 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 boop. I get up. I write it. Once you get in the room, I'm the king of improvising.
Yeah.
But once I take those glasses off, it disappears.
Yeah.
And when you're in front of five people, it disappears. I don't care if you did it 80 times. You got to look down for keywords. It becomes a blur. You're fucked. There's no mobsters with fucking glasses.
Yeah.
So I could do a great weed with glasses.
Maybe you get contacts, man.
For one eye. He told me already. He goes, you're going to be like a fucking schmuck. It's for one eye. The left eye went down the tube. That's why if you look at my car, I got dents on the left side.
So put in one contact.
It's a nightmare. If you haven't done it all your life, you're just not going to fucking go home one day.
I know. I can't. Yeah, you know?
So it's. I got to do something different for auditions now. It's become a problem.
Yeah.
That I do a good one, but it's not me. It's not me. I got to learn it inside and outward. But I've never really sweat it. If I want something, I always went for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I get my shit. If I want something, I go for it. If you put out a breakdown, if you tell 20 people I'm looking for this guy and I find out about it, I'll get the script. I'll call my buddy at CA. We'll get the script. And I'll put a fucking... That's how I got the longest yard.
Yeah.
They told me they want a Big Pussy or Saragusa.
Yeah.
And I thought one thing to myself. They're stars.
You gave them Goose a Pussy.
Yeah, I gave them Goose a Pussy. They're stars, but they're not funny.
Right.
Not what I've... I'm a classically trained. Like, I'm trained in front of a deli in Jersey. That's classically trained. when you could hold court at a deli with eight other fucking funny people,
yeah,
that's classically trained. Then as a stand-up, I did comedy in Buffalo. Once you go to Buffalo, that's it. It's over. If you can it's keep done. Them in Buffalo, if they don't shoot you, you're good to go. So I knew that in my heart,
yeah,
Nick. And I put an audition tape, and I sent it to Adam Sandler, and I got the fucking role. Spider-Man 2, same fucking thing.
What was the one where you pulled your pants down when they were turned around?
American Family, the pilot before this one on ABC years ago, about a family that wanted to move, and they moved, and they thought they were moving to paradise, and they had me for a fucking neighbor. And I'd be out there with like a bikini on, with like a little kid's pool, flying up hot dogs, asking, you want to come over for a hot dog? Never got picked up. But I still bump into the people, and they're like, listen, again, that pilot that year, I kept bumping. That was the first pilot ever that I shot that people kept in touch with me.
Yeah.
I did that one in Bronx County. It was a pilot on CBS 15. It was going to be their answer to NYPD Blue.
Right.
And these guys really kept in touch with me because the pilot had, I forget, I could drop a bunch of names. I forget who was in this pilot, but they had this show covered. Like, this show was funny as fuck. Scored the highest at ABC. ABC didn't pick it up. They picked up three other comedies.
And they all shit the bed.
And all of them shit the bed.
Yeah.
It's the story of life. You don't know why they do it. Today I was sitting there. Today, we got to get out of here in a minute.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you something. I'm sorry to keep you.
No, I don't want
to. I'm sitting there today, and I'm parked. I'm going to acupuncture. And I look up. I don't look at fucking billboards. Again, I can't see. But I'm at the light. I can see the billboard. Dracula, whatever. Let me ask you a question. How many fucking Dracula movies can they make?
I know.
How many Spider-Mans are we going to fucking make? Until when are we going to keep making fucking Spider-Man? He got bit by a spider. Now he thinks he's a fucking spider. His grandmother's retarded. They killed his fucking father. And you move on with your fucking life. That's it. There's only one way you can tell the three little fucking pigs. Not these fucking people. So, like I tell my agents, I go, these are the smartest, dumbest fucking people you've ever met in your life. When Lee makes a decision, he makes a decision on his own. When I make a decision, I ask my wife, you ask, you have also, God bless your wife. Because if you wouldn't have had a wife, they have a cliche saying, behind every good man, there's a good woman. It's not a cliche. I'm living proof.
Me
and
too.
You just, you know, there's most women you go home to and say, I want to be a writer. If she was abroad from Staten Island,
go fuck yourself.
And you went home and said, I want to be a writer, I'm thinking of a career. Well, you have to do that on your own because I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
That's what you
You're got. A lawyer.
You're
go,
a lawyer.
Go
You're
make
a fucking
some money.
Lawyer. Go make money. Go slip and fall and sue yourself. Let me do some shout outs here. I love to have you on it, bro.
No.
What's the name of the book? And give them a link where we could put this up.
I Want an Alien for Christmas. Go to Amazon.com. Go to BarnesandNoble.com. Great gift for a kid. And if it says on Amazon temporarily sold out, it's just because we're selling a lot of them. Fuck that. Still order it. They'll get it to you because we're getting a bunch shipped over soon. I Want an Alien for Christmas. And thank you for having me. I'd love to come back. Let's come with Mick and we'll get real stupid
let's
and crazy.
3 hours. We'll blow fucking.
We'll do 7 fucking hours.
We'll do 7 hours. Whatever the fuck you want to do. Let me get to then we'll get the fuck out of here. Honor.com. It's not about vitamins and whatever. It's about a higher level, taking your fucking body and your mind to a higher level. It starts with alpha brain. I'm not going to tell you again. You're having problems. You're confused. You're not focusing. 100% money back guarantee. We don't even want the fucking product back. What does that tell you? When you go to a Chinese restaurant, you got pork fried rice. Let's say they throw a fucking cattail in there and you bring it back. You know they're going to give you back? Fuck no. You get that, they'll take it out and throw it and tell you they're going to give you new order. They just remix it with soy sauce and give it back to you. Not on it. They give you your check back. What I'm trying to say is Honor don't fuck around. All right. Go to Honor.com. See what they got. The vitamins, nutrition. They also have weights. I can't help you with that stuff. But on the vitamins and minerals, they gave you 10% off. Go to Honor and press what in the box?
Church.
Stop it. Church. Get 10% off. Also look into the Stay On It program. Like Dollar Shave Club, they send it right to your fucking house every month. You don't have to leave the goddamn house. MeUndies.com. How long are you going to have those disgusting fucking underwear on with skid marks and blood and fucking chlamydia lotions on it? You don't need that shit. You know how long a man holds on to underwear? 7 fucking years. And he keeps the chick's underwear, too. After you break up with them, you take the little undies home, you sniff the pussy out of the middle, and you whack off for fucking years till the thing don't even smell like pussy no more. You can smell the cotton the fucking hand was picked with, whatever the fuck it is, right? So, whatever the fuck. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. What I'm trying to say to you is MeUndies has tremendous selection. Go to MeUndies. See what they got. Women's and men's. Go to MeUndies.com and press in.
Joey.
Boom. I got MeUndies on right now. My balls are fucking tremendous. I use them to work out because it keeps everything in place. Your nut doesn't pop out at the gym. Plus, it pulls the moisture out of your nutsack. So it goes into the thing. I swear to God, my balls don't sweat at all. They're tremendous. They smell like Irish Spring. MeUndies.com, press in.
Joey.
Boom. And there you go. You get 10%
off.
20% off. Fuck the Jews. And
free shipping in the U.S.
And free shipping in the U.S. and Canada. Who's going to give you that type of action? MeUndies. My brothers. I love these guys. Iron Dragon TV. I was watching it today. I didn't watch any of the movies. I just want to see how it worked. This is the fucking future. This is nanotech laying it down for you bitches. They sponsor fighters. This IronDragonTV.com. You're pressing what?
Joey or Church.
And you get 2 free movies to start off with on your Roku. They're going to have fun things on Saturdays. I'm not allowed to tell you. Listen, they got classic martial arts. They got Ip Man series. They got the fucking A Life of a Ninja. They got Donnie Yen. They got Chow Yun Fat. They don't have Bruce Lee, cocksucker. Why are you lying to people? They may have Bruce Lee with the 1E. I'm sorry. Remember when they had like 22 Bruce Lees? You know the Chinese, they're all cousins too. Fuck it. Iron Dragon TV, Donnie Yen, Chow Yun Fat. Go to Iron Dragon TV right now. Do me the favor. Everybody here is a martial artist. We all love that old classic shit. Press them what?
Joey or Church.
Boom, and you get 2 free movies. Who's better than fucking you, cocksuckers? All right, we're not putting this out till like Thursday morning, so I hope you enjoyed it. Nikki S., who's better than you? The best story on Hollywood.
Nah, you guys are better
fuck
than me.
Fuck this shit with all these suicide kings. It's all over. When we leave here, I'm calling you Monday. We're writing your story. I'm going to play one of the guys that
suicide
slips and falls. I'm going to play one of the guys that slips and falls. You take him to the hospital. You help him out. Lee, what's up with you, cocksucker? You're selling shirts. You got the blog. Lee lost 70 pounds. He's been walking.
Are you serious?
Yeah, in that's like 5 months. Thank you.
That's fantastic.
I'm trying.
I put on 25 pounds since the pilot.
Did you really? Oh, yeah.
It's CBS. So easy when you're working in it. I never. That's what killed me. I was always a bit like fat, but like when I went to school in Boston, I walked around. I came out here.
Wait, stop lying.
And was in an office.
You started dating a Mexican woman. You're a fucking Jew. You guys got the worst fucking diet in the world, so you started dating a Mexican chick and you went bananas.
Yeah, of course.
You started eating pussy and enchiladas and you couldn't fucking stop, okay?
Ant your pussy.
It's not bad.
That's what happened. This guy's a filthy Jew. You know these Jews. They try to be all right around Jewish chicks, but once they get around a Puerto Rican or a fucking Yam broad, they lose their fucking mind.
I did not know that about the Jewish people.
Yeah. My girlfriend before this one was black.
Yeah, he's a freak. These Jews have
you've never dated a Jewish girl?
For what?
No, I don't think so. No. No.
I've dated many Jewish girls in my life. They're lovely people.
I love them. I love Jewish girls. Jews don't like... It's like me. I'm Cuban. I would never date a Cuban chick. They drive me crazy.
See, I'm Italian. I married a beautiful Italian.
Did you really?
Nice
lucked out.
And copacetic.
Red hair?
No, but...
Old school? No, you never know.
When I had hair? Red hair.
You have red hair?
It was Auburn. I was actually quite delightful to look at back in the day.
You're one of those red Italians.
Yeah, not anymore. Now I'm a big, fat, bald
You're
motherfucker.
A beautiful man. Thank you very much. You got
Thank
a beautiful
you.
Story. You got balls of steel. Something a lot of people forgot in this fucking country. Thank you.
No.
Your success does not surprise me. It's balls, brother.
I had a lot of good fortune, but thank you for having me on
Stay
your
black.
Show.
The Ugots brothers coming up next. Lee Syatt. Get it together. We're going to Comedy Store. What are we doing?
Okay.
All right, let's go. We got to go in 5 minutes, so get it together. I love you guys. Stay black. Put that music. What's the music?
We're playing the Beatles, but I have to read the ads first.
All right, take your time, but hurry up.
Show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Use code word church to get 10% off of any of the great products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. Show is also brought to you by NatureBox.com. Oh, we didn't talk about NatureBox.
Oh, shit! What the fuck? NatureBox, why are you sitting there like a fucking mook on the other side? Stop going to the lunch thing at work with that glass with all those potato chips and saturated fat. You don't need that shit. Go to naturebox.com. You know why? Because everything is free at NatureBox. That's how we're doing it today. Free, bitches, free. You're saying, Joe, how's it going to be free? They're going to send you 5 packages of nutritious snacks, whether it's the chocolate bonbons, whether it's the fucking pepper and salt, the lentil beans. I mean, everything is delicious, nutritious, and everything is good for you. You're not going to blow up and be a fat fuck. Go to naturebox.com today right now and press in.
Joey.
Boom! And we know what you're going to get? A free box sent right to your fucking house. No drama, no nothing. I'm telling you right now, you're going to enjoy it. Every day on Twitter, people thank me and say, Joey, thank you for the code for Nature's Box. I've been eating Nature's Box for years. I fucking love it. What's the code?
Joey.
Boom! And you're going to get a free sampler box sent right to your door.
Free shipping.
Gratis. Free. Go right now. Right now! Don't fuck around. I love you. Stay black.
Like you just heard, now that the show's over, don't forget to go to naturebox.com and sign up to get your free sample box of great-tasting, healthy snacks. Forget the vending machine and start snacking smarter with delicious treats like barbecue kettle kernels. Go to naturebox.com/Joey. That's naturebox.com/Joey. Thank you to irondragontv.com. It's a new Roku channel. You get to use code word Joey or church, and you get 2 free rentals. They have the Ip Man series, and it's compatible with the 4K technology.
the 4K technology comes out in January.
Okay. Lastly, the show is brought to you by MeUndies.com. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey and you're going to get 20% off of great men's and women's underwear. And you're also going to get free shipping right now in the United States and Canada. So go to MeUndies.com/Joey. And again, you're going to get 20% off of your first order with free shipping in the United States and Canada.